Podcasting 2.0 for July 2nd, 2021, episode 44, separating the nodes from the noobs. I wish I could say that this new studio is so good I can even do my nails while doing the show, but no. Couple of issues, couple of bugs to work out, but it is Friday, time once again for a board meeting of Podcasting 2.0, bringing you all the latest news from the podcast industry, the community, and podcastindex.org along with podcastindex.social. I'm Adam Curry, in the heart of Hill Country, Texas, and in Alabama, the man who can decode a TLV from a node ID at the drop of a hat, my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Jones.
We may be able to decode TLVs and HTLCs and UTXOs and all this kind of stuff, but I mean, like, clearly we can't figure out how to wire up a studio or reboot a Mac. I mean, like, oh my God, the amount of trouble we've had on both sides in the last 15 minutes is incredible.
It's crazy how you make a move. My whole studio has always been portable as a setup, and the whole idea is that you can just, you know, take it with you on the road, bring it back, everything fits into place. So I reconstructed in the new house, in the new studio, and two things happened. One, the touch screen, which I use for jingles, just starts intermittently working, not working, no matter what configuration I try. We just tried for about 20 minutes before we started. I have no idea how these things can change all of a sudden.
Yep. Welcome to the joys of, all modern computing, but most more specifically the joys of Surface Pro and USB-C. I mean, like, yeah. In the old days, you know, I work in the financial industry, so all the desks have multiple monitors, three, sometimes four monitors.
Sure.
And so we've been dual monitor at least, or just say multi-monitor for years. So at least 12 years. And for all of that time, it was flawless. Like, you would plug in a monitor, it would come up, you'd have your extended desktop, and then you would have to maybe go into the display settings and flip the orientation where left is right, right's left,
right.
That was all fine until USB-C. When the USB-C thing took over, USB-C / Thunderbolt, when it took over, all of the docking stations for all the laptops, they all went to, and I would say DisplayPort as well. When all those three technologies came in, the port, the docking stations and the port replicators all switched from like proprietary built-in ports that plug straight into the bus to being basically USB-C extenders. Mm. And when that happened, nothing is predictable anymore. Like, nothing. You could reboot a computer 12 times in a row, and then on the 13th time, it comes up and half your monitors don't work. And now, there's absolutely no reason for it.
What's interesting is this has a USB 3.0, not a USB-C.
Well, it's probably still using...
It still sucks.
It's because all that stuff runs through the same bus now. So you have DisplayPort, Thunderbolt.
Right.
It's all... I don't know what generation Surface Pro you have.
6 Pro.
6. I wonder if that's the Skylake generation. Anyway, one of those, like, when they started getting away from the proprietary stuff and going to just USB-C everywhere, or it wasn't C at the time, it was like Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Thunderbolt everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's just like, shoot me now.
Well,
somehow we're going to have self-driving cars, but we can't figure out how to get multi-monitor touch screen to work.
Yeah, touch. So that, of course, was not the only problem. The one that's most interesting is the power supply for my headphone amplifier just broke. You know, it started to pulse, and so, like, okay, that's no good. Now, it's a 12-volt power supply, a wall wart, not a commonly found item.
No.
So what do you do in a pinch? And this happened yesterday, just before we started No Agenda. I got a 9-volt battery.
Oh, no, you did.
Cut the wire, taped it on. Now, and I'm using that today as well because I haven't had time to go find a 12-volt wall wart adapter. But what's interesting is the headphone amplifier kind of really wants 12 volts. So it took me a little while to get used to louder modulation sounds like it's over-modulating or it sounds distorted, but that's because the headphone amp can't draw enough power from the battery. It's a mess. And let alone the Electro Voice 320 microphone, which I love this microphone. You have the same, don't you?
Yeah, I got the same mic, yeah.
It's very sensitive to dimmers.
Oh, you very, got another dimmer problem?
Yeah, no, and it was the outside. I'm like, well, how can this be? And the one of the outside lights, which is on a dimmer and was still on, and we're just new in the house, so I don't know everything. I don't know the sequence of stuff to turn on and off yet. It's right on the other side of the studio wall. So I'm like, oh, okay, that fix it. So
you,
now...
You need a Faraday cage is what you need.
Yeah, exactly.
A copper mesh, like just line the walls with copper mesh.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, it's concrete floors. I don't have a rug yet, so it's a little boomy and all that stuff. But anyway, my week has been kind of as more as a spectator than anything, just watching what's been going down on podcastindex.social mainly. And you and Eric have been just kicking up a storm on our Signal channel.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out how to, because we got all these transactions that come in as the 1% of our split for API stuff. So if an app that does value for value streaming, if they use our API to get the value block, we put in a 1% fee.
Right.
So that means that we get a split.
Mm-hmm.
So now what we have is, you know, over the last months or whatever, we've been like, we'll get to it. We'll figure it out later.
Until
when
that
it comes
day.
To like documenting, yeah,
right?
Like document because it is income. I mean, it's technically income. So we will eventually we'll have to declare it. So we have how are we going to do this? I mean, how many transactions do we have? Well, we have almost 300,000 transactions because they're all tiny little micropayments. And
right.
So well,
right.
So I had to figure out how to interface with LND on our node. And pull the invoices and then parse the TLV records and all that stuff. And so then you have different possible transaction types you would have.
Let me explain to everybody what we're talking about. Because there's lots of people who love listening to our show, mainly for the hot namespace talk and open source pull requests. And, you know, so people, they just tune in for it, and no matter what, because it's a sexy show. So what we're talking about here is the value for value streaming payments and the information that is sent from a podcast app when making either a streaming per minute payment or a boost payment and how it comes into the podcaster wallet. And, of course, Podcast Index has its own wallet, that's where we get the 1%. So there's all kinds of information being sent, which can be extremely valuable for statistics, which we'll talk about in a minute, but also for financial accounting. And so the way you interact with that is through LND.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
So now everyone knows what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah. So if you run a Lightning node, you're running one of a few different pieces of software. You're either running LND or C Lightning, and I think there's one more, right?
I don't know what it is offhand. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so there's at least two. I'm almost positive there's three. Mm-hmm. C Lightning and LND are the main ones. LND is the sort of reference implementation from Lightning Labs, and that's what I would say most people use LND.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting projects that are using C though for some specific reasons, I'm sure.
And so, I mean, just think of it like a podcast app. It's all open spec, and you can whether you have LND or C Lightning may have some features over here that you like, and LND may have some that you like. Blah blah blah. So we're running LND through Voltage, and LND is what takes care of the Lightning part because LND sits on top, so to speak, of just a normal Bitcoin node, full node. So when you're doing Lightning transactions, you can interact with LND to do things like set up channels, do payment, send invoices, create invoices, send key send, all the different stuff you do, peer with other network nodes. And so LND has an internal database inside of it. I don't know what it uses. I'm not sure if it's, I think it's a NoSQL type database.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Anyway, it's got an internal database where all those transactions are recorded. Most normal nodes don't have that many transactions. Don't have very, I mean, like you may have, you know, 1,000 transactions in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, we have, you know, 1,000 transactions
yeah.
a day.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, there's like almost 300,000 transactions in the database, and they have a pagination thing where you can sort of walk back through the tree. It'll give you 100 at a time.
Right. What's interesting to me is that the Lightning Network was, you know, part of what it was set up to do was for microtransactions. But I think the two things, one, the term microtransaction was poorly defined or maybe not defined at all. And second, the whole drive of, to this day still, except you know, with some few exceptions, of Lightning Network development is, oh, yeah, well, we can send a Bitcoin immediately with very low fees. So, you know, that's where you get the Wumbo channels and we have to be able to send hundreds of dollars back and forth, which is all important too, but it's really not set up for micropayments, it seems to me.
Yeah, like not in quantity.
Right, not in any right. type in of high, quantity. In, yeah, high quantity. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like you should see how, if anybody knows the Zap wallet where you can interface. Zap is a mobile app or a desktop app where it'll let you interface with LND directly,
yeah.
where you can see your stats and everything. Like when you pull that thing up, it takes a while for it to parse through all those database transactions.
Oh, I don't even bother. I use Zeus and Zap separately. So Zap I use to look at channels because I like the way it just displays channels so I can see you know if there's a channel in trouble that needs some rebalancing. But for just looking at the most recent transactions, I use Zeus. You bring it up, it immediately has the last 50 transactions.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, waiting when you do that refresh. Oh, my God, they last forever on Zap Wallet.
Yeah, yeah it does.
Yeah. So, I think Zeus is just tracking it in the background all the time.
Okay, that's essentially what we're doing now.
Right.
We're updating every 5 minutes. I pull all the latest transactions.
Right.
And right now, we're not doing anything with them, really, but we just needed a way to capture them because if our Lightning node were to blow up and we had to roll another one, we could recover our channels from channel backup.
Right, right.
But we may lose all that transaction data. And so we need all that. Now, as part of going through this and looking at all the transactions and storing them, there's so much rich data there. It's great.
It's unbelievable how much. Yeah. And I should say that what Erica's working on is all related to this as we create the Gene's Mom podcaster wallet experience, which I mean, he's going real deep on features and how this is going to be built out and how it's going to is really going to be a fun place to be.
Yeah, and he's doing all the research too for the
legalities,
legalities and compliance and everything. I think he helped Mitch the other day. He had a phone call with Mitch because Mitch had some questions. It's like that. All that stuff is super. Important and you know, like me and you tend to, or like, nah, well,
No. This is exactly why we brought Eric into the organization. Is like, who is going to ask a very annoying questions, and who is going to be completely OCD about getting the answers? Because we don't want to set ourselves up to fail. And by the way, for that alone,
here's your cue to boost. You know you want to
support us. Boost away, people. Tim from LM Pay was telling me that he was, I think you saw it too. He was listening to the show and then we played that jingle and he boosted. He said, oh my God, I just did what you told me to.
That's exactly what he said. I just did what I was told.
And that's how you got to do it, podcasters. It's that simple. You could just use this jingle.
Here's your cue to boost. You know you want to.
Alternatively, you can
boost.
You can throw in a Fauci boost.
Yeah, it's those jingles are open source. Just take them, stick them in your podcast.
Do whatever you want. I'll make sure I publish them.
It's mind control. It works every time.
So on the lines of this data, which is very powerful data, because when you had, and you were just about to get into that when I interrupted you, we have multiple types of transactions. Is of course regular incoming, outgoing, but then we have from the apps themselves. The stream payment, so that's a per minute Satoshi amount or the boost. And what this is going to give us is incredible statistics of people actually listening to the program.
Right.
And I guess my next question would be, is there a way to overlay that with a timestamp as to when, what time code the payment comes in at as it relates to the podcast being listened to?
That's in there.
Mm-hmm. That already works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in there. It's in the TLV.
Even from the per minute Satoshis.
Yeah.
So you can now overlay that and see exactly when someone boosted.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad I have a desk that can be raised automatically. I'd put it up a little bit. Hold on a second. I'm putting the desk up a bit here. All right. Here's why I go ahead. Go ahead.
So that's in the TLV record.
Wow.
The different TLV you discombobulated me. There's different ones. Okay, so you have different types of invoices. Everything in L&D that comes in, every incoming payment is an invoice, right, whether it's key send or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have, like in our case, we have various different kinds of incoming payments. We could have an invoice where, let's just say that you needed to transfer extra funds onto the node,
mm-hmm,
in order to open a channel.
Right.
Maybe you create an invoice and then fund it from some other source. That would be like just a standard Lightning payment. Then you may have like just a key send payment, just a random key send payment that somebody sends. Maybe they're making a donation or something. I don't know. And then you have the per minute streaming value for value stuff. And right, almost universally, those all have TLV records attached to them. Usually it's like 7629161 or something. I think that's the one. And that's the one that Satoshi.stream formalized. And it's got in there all the different payload data. So it's got like what type of event it was, whether it was a stream or a boost, like a per minute stream or a boost. It's got timestamp, the feed ID of the index that was being listened to, the episode ID.
Mm-mm-mm.
It's got all that stuff in it.
The reason
don't let your desk back down yet, because there's something else in there as well.
Okay.
There's the tip. Like, so there's a tip.
Just the tip?
I told you keep the desk up. There's a tip TLV in there. So that if somebody like Steven for CurioCaster, if somebody uses the tip jar on his site,
it shows that as a specific tip payment. Nice.
It is. And he's going to put in a message field in there where somebody can put a custom message in.
Well, we kind of need that for boost too, don't we? Not necessarily. Here's why this is extremely relevant today. And I find this the biggest headline that is perhaps underplayed purposefully. And this is the Apple download bug.
Mm.
Now, Apple, do I hear a buzz in my, I think I hear a buzz. Well, I'm just going to ignore it. No one heard it.
I don't hear it?
No.
No.
It could be my headphone amp. It could be anything at this point.
Well, you don't have enough batteries. You need to string a couple more batteries on it.
I did that once at MTV. I was in the audio booth, and the audio booth had just boxes and boxes of 9-volt batteries for the microphones, the wireless mics. And so I connected a whole bunch of them together because they click together.
Oh.
You can build this
block.
Did
something bad happen?
No. But then I put it on a light bulb and it worked. And I thought that was really cool. I created 110 volts.
You're 3 volts low. You only get 9 volts and you need 12. So you need to take your 9-volt and add 2 more AA's to it.
Yeah.
A daisy chain. And then you're 12 volts. You're good to go.
I'm warming up the soldering iron as we speak. It's going to be beautiful. Okay.
All right.
So the Apple downloads bug with the new Apple Podcast app, the headline kind of reads as such. It broke, which resulted in 27% less downloads registered by the main by podcast hosts, which James Cridlin, in fact, equated that to a $7.7 million loss in advertising revenue. To which I say, no, that is $7.7 million of money that was wasted otherwise, because no one was complaining. I didn't see listeners everywhere complaining. People still listen to the shows if they were subscribed and it downloaded or not, because you just click on it and starts to stream. And this
This
shows the fallacy of download measurements for advertising. And I think that's why it's being, you know, low key on the headlines, because any advertiser looks at this and goes, wait a minute, 27% less because it wasn't auto downloading. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that, that 27% less people heard that those podcasts and thus my message? No, that's the stolen money. It's actually less than I thought it would be, 27%. And Lord knows how much that is on Android. I'm just going to say combined probably about 50% of all podcast download statistics used for advertising purposes is crap.
Fiction.
Yeah, well, not fiction, but it's... No, in fact, no. It's 100% the truth. It's download. But it's not a listen.
Well, James was saying something on the end, on the Mastodon earlier about, you know, statistics and how these download numbers need to change or need to be calculated differently.
And they went through 10 years of coming up with the IAB standards. People paid $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to be certified for something that is falling apart overnight.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to write. I was talking to Dan Benjamin.
Love that.
We had it, you know, we had him on the show talking about this very topic five months ago.
Yep.
And I talked to him recently again, and we're going to try to push this. I'm writing a blog post right now about everything in my mind is going to have to go to URL parameters. Meaning people are going to have to stop looking at raw server level download numbers and begin to compile their stats off the URL parameters from the request.
But this is where you lose me. We have a fantastic system, at least the elements of the system, within our grasp.
No, I agree. I mean, 100%.
Any podcast app, in fact, a podcast app that wants to participate, let's just say there's an IAB program, and the program means you participate in statistics. All you need to do is send off one Satoshi per minute with the following TLV records. And it can go to an IAB wallet. They can refund it. I don't care. It's just about the transaction, just for the data. That's right. Some real world data right there. It doesn't have to cost anybody anything. It's relatively simple. You know, you don't have to have necessarily. I mean, it all comes down to who do you want tracking you, and how do you want them to do it.
The answer is nobody.
But it's
and nobody.
Right. But that's not true, because if you listen to Podland, Pod News, New Media Show, any podcast related, Podcast Business Journal, it's all about advertising and what deals. It's all about content. I mean, some, you know, obviously mm-hmm. there's some infrastructure stuff, but this to me is it's crippling for the advertising statistics business.
I can tell you after the Twitter back and forth that I've been going on with Peter Wells and James. Peter Wells is a podcast journalist for the Sydney Morning Herald, who just basically poo-poos everything that we're doing.
No, he literally said, I can't give a flying fuck about Podcast Index.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah.
I mean, he's my nomination for our foil. I mean, every superhero needs a foil.
Is he our Lex Luthor?
Yes, he's a Lex. Yes, like, I mean, you know, Bruce Willis needs a Samuel Jackson. I'm nominating him. That's mm-hmm. but
hereby accepted.
I mean, okay, but I mean, like, after having that conversation and seeing the resistance, some of which came from people like Ben Slinger at Podchaser. I'm like, why are you against, like? he was like piping in, you know, putting likes on people who were saying stuff against the namespace. I'm like, what is this?
Well, that's very interesting. As I just heard a whole interview with one of the founders of the taxonomy project.
Mm-hmm.
We've integrated that.
I know. I didn't understand that at all. And so I thought, well, okay.
Wait a minute. Is Podchaser? Are we competing with Podchaser somehow in some fashion? What have we done?
Not that I know of.
Did we piss in somebody's cornflakes?
It's possible. I did not that I'm aware of. I mean, they just started an API, but I mean, that's just been recent. I mean, we've been doing this since last year, so I don't think so. But anyway, I was watching that whole back and forth, and I was thinking to myself, you know, I was remembering back to when everybody thought that JSON had a real chance to supplant RSS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that is the biggest bunch of malarkey. I mean, if people can't even agree that chapters are cool, how in the hell is anybody ever going to think that the whole industry could move from RSS to JSON? I mean, this podcast, the podcast industry, I called it, Munchausen by 1,000 proxies.
Yes.
It is basically the creators of the podcast industry, who are the podcasters themselves, have such Stockholm syndrome about big tech that they don't even realize that they're the ones in charge anymore. They think everybody thinks they have to wait around for somebody else to do something. It's so frustrating. Like, come on, guys, you have to do is say things like it. Oh, let me back up for a second. So one of the things that Peter was saying is, all these other podcast apps are great. You know, they're all fantastic. But Spotify is the one to beat. And his reasoning was, it's slick, quote unquote, which I don't know what that means. And it allows you to jump when you get out of the car. You can pick up where you left off on your Alexa device.
Ooh, wow. Ooh,
that's what makes it, quote unquote, the app to beat.
Okay.
But then he will go on to say, oh, but, you know, clearly these other apps are better. I like Pocket Cast, Overcast, Downcast. I mean, like, if all the other podcasts are better, and then why not just tell people to try out a different podcast app?
Yeah.
It's very simple. And if every podcaster did that, if every podcaster just chose one a week and said, hey, I know that you like listen. I know that, I can see that all my listeners are using, Apple Podcasts. Or 60% of them are using Apple Podcasts. Do this for me. This week, download on your phone, download a different podcast app and just pick one and try it out.
This is
and
what
then the next week you say, try this next one. People will do it.
Yes, this is what I've been, eating our own dog food on that, on No Agenda Show. So just right after we thank the artist, before we go into our thank you segment for producer support, I highlight a feature, talk about something that works in a certain way, and then I'll either say try out this specific app or try out any new app from newpodcastapps.com. And what's interesting to me is the listeners are the ones that are really promoting this, and they're telling other listeners and podcasters to check out these apps. But the power of the podcaster saying that is very big. So I think there's a couple things going on. So the infrastructure wise, hosting companies, other service companies, everyone is just waiting to be bought, and they can tell you no, but they're full of shit. They're waiting to be bought. They're just waiting for their turn. Although it's kind of thinning out. I don't think, and some have no intention ever. Of doing that, a few maybe, and you know, and to me the pinnacle, and we're both scheduled to be at Podcast Movement. The pinnacle is all of a sudden Podcast Movement comes out with, oh my God, we're so lucky we have a keynote from Mark Cuban.
Oh, that was a kick! That was a kick in the junk.
I really, Dan Benjamin. Really, really, well, kicking the crotch to everybody. what now all of a sudden this guy's the most important thing for a keynote?
He doesn't even have an app yet.
No, he's just talking to talk some shit.
That if I was Dan Benjamin, I would be pissed.
Well, I got to hand it to Silicon Valley, and I count Spotify as a part of that. They set out to destroy podcasting, to take it into their own realm, their own walled garden. It started with Spotify, and we don't have to rehash that. But there's what Apple is doing shows complete disdain. They've purchased all the assets that are worthwhile to them, certainly the hosting companies, and probably just to learn while others have learned in half. Apple's not going to buy a hosting company. They've built one themselves. And they probably had all kinds of great meetings with the willing podcast host. Oh, yeah, come on in. We're getting to Apple. Come on, guys, let's put out the good silverware. Apple's coming to visit today. And they stole all your ideas, and they're going to do that themselves. And they do not care about the open system. It's not in their DNA at all. They're not interested. They want to own the content, and then they come out with big money deals, which puts all of the podcasters and content creators like deers in the headlight. Like, what? There's money to be made? Like, what? I mean, whatever Amazon's latest acquisition was.
The $80 million one-week window.
Yeah.
I see the podcast industry beginning to act like traditional media as well.
They've been doing that for a long time, Dave. This has been ongoing.
You saw the Britney Spears. I need my conservatorship is harming me. Came out of nowhere. And it's like, I was thinking the whole time, that was like last week, there's all these stories about Britney Spears conservatorship. I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't even know what conservatorship is. I'm having to Google. I'm like, what is this story about? And then we find out this week, well, it's because there's a podcast launching about her. So I'm like,
Most news you see on the mainstream is entertainment related for products they also own.
Yeah.
ABC does a good job of that.
Oh, okay. This was negative advertising from a PR firm.
Sure. Yeah.
I think Peter's problem is the Australian lockdowns.
Well, that's what Cridlin said. Well, you know, maybe he's just pissed off about being locked down.
I think that could be true. I think that could be true, though. I mean, I feel sorry for Australia, man. I mean, they are just, it's endless. It doesn't bother Cridlin as much because he's British. They're used to, you know, they're used to
complying.
They have had hundreds of years to hone the fine skills of mockery. Yeah. See, that's how they defend themselves is through mockery. Yes,
good point.
The Aussies aren't, I mean, they're not used to this. Somebody's going to crack down there if they keep going with these endless lockdowns. I feel the same way with Canada too. I mean, this is like somebody's just going to lose it.
Well, if you see all of the countries related to the crown, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the United Kingdom are all in the same paralyzed state.
Yeah.
But
that's not good.
Anyway, sorry for them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an excuse to be a dick.
Do you know there's only 20? I think I heard James say there's only 25. Million people in Australia.
That's correct.
I didn't realize it was that low.
Yeah, it's a big country,
and everything in that country wants to kill you. So that's another thing.
Have you ever visited? I was there for 2 weeks. I did a documentary in 1990.
Oh, really?
Fantastic. Loved it.
I've heard it's beautiful.
The people are great. It's just everything was fantastic. Of course, back then they still had guns. So
Let's see. I got this article here. Strike is going to put Bitcoin buying directly in the app.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But I think they're not doing it themselves. They have a financial partner. This is the big thing that's happening with Bitcoin. There's now NYDIG, NYDIG, and they...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they are providing services to financial corporations for trading in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's what Strike is going to use, but it's an API. And you just tie into the API and you can allow your customers to buy or sell Bitcoin for fiat.
Did you see the whole, did you see that story, which this is related, and it was somebody on the blockchain caucus?
Yes.
In Congress?
Yes. The governor of Wyoming.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was the guy they quoted in here. It gave some Democratic Representative Bill Foster of Illinois, co-chair of the House Blockchain Caucus.
What's his name?
Democratic Representative Bill Foster of Illinois.
Oh, no, I don't have this story.
Said Tuesday that laws must be passed to allow federal courts to identify digital asset holders and then reverse transactions in Bitcoin.
Yeah. No. Yeah. There's a bunch of douchebags. There's some other guy, I don't have the clip, also on the same committee, who was saying, Bitcoin's good, Ethereum's better, Dogecoin is the best, but my state lottery is really where you want to be.
Okay.
Sure. And Loomis. Loomis of Wyoming is doing a lot. For Bitcoin. Really? Listen to this. This is, I'm sorry, not Governor, Senator. Senator Loomis from Wyoming.
Senator Cynthia Loomis of Wyoming is the founder of the Financial Innovation Caucus in Congress. She's been a major advocate for cryptocurrencies on Capitol Hill. And I sat down with her for CNBC's Financial Advisor Summit, and she told me she envisions Bitcoin in particular becoming an important component of individual retirement portfolios. She believes it can serve as a hedge against inflation as the size of the nation's debt relative to GDP hits historic highs.
I encourage people to buy and hold. I encourage them to save Bitcoin for their retirement, for their future. And that's because as the Congress spends trillions and trillions of dollars and is flooding our economy and the world economy with U.S. dollars, there's no way that we cannot debase the value of the U.S. dollars.
And Loomis practices what she preaches. She's an investor in Bitcoin as well.
I buy Bitcoin and I hold Bitcoin.
You buy Bitcoin?
Oh, yes.
You have Bitcoin?
I do.
How much Bitcoin do you have?
Well, I only have, I think, 5 Bitcoin.
So only 5 Bitcoin, but she bought them in 2013 for about $300 each. So she can now add a couple of zeros to that number. And Wyoming is in the process of setting up its own crypto banking system that Loomis hopes will become a model for other states as well.
Banking system.
Yes.
This stuff is happening. It's happening at a country level, mainly poor, suppressed countries under control of the global banking system, or yeah. States exercising states' rights.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is happening, and I think that stories like that with the guy who said we need to be able to reverse transaction and unmask and all that, like it. So if people are not familiar with what's called public choice theory. It's this idea, it's usually in the realm of economics where you analyze people's behaviors based in politics, people's political behavior is as if they were market participants.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking sort of an economic view that people will make rational decisions in an economic sense about more than just economics, also about any sort of market. So like you can just look at politics as if it were a market.
Right.
And so one of the ideas there's a bunch of different ideas like log rolling and other things. But one of the ideas is what's called juicer bills. And juicer bills are a tried and true long-standing thing within politics where you threaten an industry with a certain bill and it gets publicity and that kind of thing. But the goal is never to pass the bill. The goal is to just get people to donate to your campaign so that you won't pass the bill.
Yes, I think that's a science that is very well studied and practiced.
Yeah, yeah, and so you have things like this, like we need to crack down on Bitcoin. We need to make sure we can
support my reelection campaign.
Exactly, and that's the way of sending a little warning shot to the Bitcoin.
Oh, well, hold on a second. Hey, what was that guy's name who said that?
Bill Foster, Representative Bill Foster from Illinois.
Okay, let's go to Open Secrets. Let's see who's funding Mr. Bill Foster from Illinois. I love this. Is what I do.
Yeah.
Let us see. Top industries. Oh, security and investment. Gee, who would figure that?
Well, shocking.
Let's see. Let's see if we can see some of these. Hold on. Where do I get to the individual? people as well. If you do, let me do combined with leadership political action committees. Yeah, baby. Now it starts to look good. He's raised $2.5 million. Interesting. A lot of university stuff.
Ah, that makes
education number one, but securities and investment number two. I wish I could see the whole list.
You combine that with log rolling as well, and you say, okay, well, I'll come out and I'll juice your bill to give you support, and then you're gonna help me when you're gonna vote for my legislation,
three weeks
from now. So that, I mean, like, all of this stuff is just you could call it the swamp, you know. That's the way this stuff works. And so when you see, things in the news like this, it doesn't mean that this stuff is actually going to happen.
No.
It just means they're fundraising.
Yeah. But I think the genie's out of the bottle. You know,
yeah. I think so too.
The reports are that Soros's family trading desk, that they have a green light to trade in Bitcoin, which means they could be shorting it too. You don't know. It could be. And eventually all of them short at some point. But everyone's in the game. So I should probably come up with a recommendation for a good history of money book. I've been reading so much of it. It's actually on the Satoshi Library. I'll have to find it, put it in the show notes. When you really look at the history of money, it's just a mindset. Yeah. Mm. We still talk about how many clams that costs, because money in the early days when the first settlers were in New York, they used clam shells. With drilled holes, which the Indians, the Native Americans at the time were using as some form of value mechanism, and so the settlers use that as well. So that's how we today still use. I paid 500 clams for that, you know. And then wampum was another shell sort. So you can go on and on and on. And this is just another iteration, but it's clearly threatening to. And again, it's just a mindset. It's just what you believe has value. That's all. And the more people talk about Bitcoin and Satoshis, the more people understand, oh, okay, it has value. And there's a value attached to it. And the only thing we know now is, well, that value goes up and down a lot.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other big story to me, or stories, multiple this week, was all the ban, you know, the different people getting banned from different platforms.
Or demonetized.
I brought some clips because I thought there's something pretty interesting about that as well.
Okay.
Let's see who I got here. So there's two. You had the story. You had the Bandrew Scott thing, and then Andy Go, I think is.
No, Andy No. No.
Andy No.
Yeah,
okay.
Andy No.
And Bandrew Scott got kicked off YouTube, and then Andy No got kicked off SoundCloud. Both were reversed. But the stories are pretty interesting. Let's see. Play. This was the main thing with Bandrew Scott. The story was sort of played out like it was AI. Mm. You know, that was sort of the focus. Okay. Well, he got banned by a bot and there was no human interaction and that kind of thing.
Right.
But I thought the more that was interesting, but I thought the more interesting part of it was this. Play Bandrew Scott clip.
And they had discussed this group of trolls who are employed by the CCP. I think they're called the 50 Cent Army, something like that. And they discussed this method that they have to get rid of content that is critical of the CCP. And the way they do this is first, leave comments in reply to stuff saying, this is a dumb idea, you're an idiot, why don't you think about this, stupid America, stuff like that. And then they also mass flag stuff as spam and scams, because all the algorithms, all these platforms are more likely to just get rid of something if it is a spam, a piece of spam, or especially if it's a scam. So they mass flag comments and videos to get rid of stuff that is critical to the CCP. That is my theory about what actually happened. But this could be completely wrong because YouTube doesn't share a frickin' single piece of information about what actually happened. So I'm left here just feeling around in the dark saying what actually happened. So I have to think through every single comment that I've ever made. And that's the only one that I can think of that might have garnered enough hatred, enough vitriol against it to be mass flagged. Because if these theories that they have put forth are true, if this methodology that they have put forth is true, where the 50 Cent Army mass flags comments and videos as spam to get them erased, that would make perfect sense. And it is very effective because even though I have the ban reversed, guess what does not show up again? My comment thanking Laowai86 for making this type of content, making sure that the comments that are critical of the CCP are erased forever unless the people who are banned and then get the ban reversed remember what they wrote, then go back to these videos and type it again, which I'm guessing most people do not do. They have been successful in silencing that opposition.
I believe this to be completely true.
Yeah.
That makes completely. There's no AI that is going through and finding hate messages or hate speech or anything. This isn't going to waste any time on that. You have the, now he says the 50 Cent crew, but there's a number of them. It all started kind of with Media Matters in America, which was initially funded by the Clintons. Then we have the Waking Giant or some other outfit.
Little Giants?
No, Woke Giants, something like that.
I don't know. Yeah.
And so one thing is, you know, one way to go is to directly approach advertisers and say, hey, you know, your ad is showing up on that website or is being placed in that podcast or on that YouTube. And, you know, that's hateful. That's horrible. And you post that publicly, and the advertiser goes within seconds, done. And the other way is to report it as hateful as such. You know, we had an example of that. Someone was very angry at Tim Dillon, comedian slash podcaster, and we received at Podcast Index a form note. The same one was received by a couple of app developers. And it was, you know, this guy's transphobic, homophobic, squirrel-phobic, all the things that he was. You need to take him off. That's horrible. And so, you know, these are campaigns, and there's a lot of that. And always, when there's advertisers involved, the pressure is going to work very swiftly.
Yeah, because it's not brand safe.
It's not brand safe. And podcasting, by its very nature, is not brand safe, and it can't be checked, and it will never scale to enormous heights because of that very reason.
Well, so the Andy No thing is very similar. You know, his podcast was removed off SoundCloud.
He hadn't even posted an episode for like a year or something. It wasn't like
It was a long time, and so it was sitting there, and then he got it got reversed. And the note that they sent to him about the reversal, well, it's the first thing they said was they sent him an email saying that your podcast had been banned on the grounds of being dedicated to violating the site's rules.
That's
pretty specific.
Yeah.
Not just that you violated community guidelines, but dedicated to violating the site's rules.
Excellent.
So then their reversal, they emailed him and said, following an initial review conducted by a team member, your account was removed from the platform for violating our terms. We have conducted additional reviews of the account and found our initial conclusions are not an accurate reflection of the hosted content. And they said, reviewing reported content is not an automated process. So this takes time. So that tells me that the reviewing of the reported content is not an automated process, but the collection and action of
is immediate and automatic.
Mm-hmm. And that is purely for brand safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is probably still the same type of deal of being targeted by certain groups. It reminded me of a podcast. I listen to the Scott Horton show all the time, and Scott had a guy on there named Ryan Dawson, this maybe been a year ago. And it was a similar type thing. He got kicked off Patreon. Play Dawson 1.
Okay.
Because I'm a Patreon refugee, so my Patreons are writing them because they actually charged everybody for July, even though we only had 2 days of July's content. So I told them, don't let them take your money. And so I've got three different reasons that they've given, and people have screenshot this and given them to me. One was accusing me of using racial slurs about the black community, which I never did. Another was religious bigotry, which I don't even talk about religion. And another one was pornography with child porn and bestiality, which I've also never done. So they can't even make up a good reason.
Yeah, that sounds like a standard reporting template.
Yeah, it's a hit job.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, if people are not aware, this is very similar to the way that things work in war with the native populations of a war. So like you can look at it in Afghanistan, this happened a lot where you would have a tribal leader that would go to the U.S. Drone base there and say, hey, this other tribe is harboring terrorists.
Yeah.
And here's the location. Here's where you need to drone strike.
Here's the GPS coordinates.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll light it up for you.
Yep. And then come to find out, they weren't harboring terrorists. They were just having
wedding. It's always a wedding. Yeah. It was always a wedding.
A long running dispute with this other tribe. Yeah. And they used the Americans to take them out. Same type of deal. And, so play, and that's, I think, Dawson 2 will flesh that out.
They're not only
well,
causing racism.
At the same time, though, I mean, if you're running things at Patreon, then you know that you're going to have, they have an entire department for dealing with tattletales, right? I mean, they have to.
Because
every day somebody's trying to get somebody else kicked off of there. And so they can't just give in to everybody. They have to have some standards about how they do this, right? In other words, somebody's in charge, not just a computer.
Well, it's almost a computer because it's NPCs. Like it's almost like a sport to cancel people. Like I got one. I think they get rewarded for it or something. So I have some very powerful people, and they wrote on Twitter like after they got me kicked off PayPal, they're like, his Patreon is next.
You know, that's partially true. I want to listen to the rest of the presentation before I comment. But the real reason, there's a real reason why Patreon has to cancel certain people. And I wonder if that's going to come up in this conversation.
Well, it has real impact on people's lives.
For like, sure.
I mean, this, you can, and this is kind of where I'm going with this. The real impact that it has on people's finances and their life can lead to real consequences, and I'm wondering if that's why. Well, go ahead and play Dawson 3, and we'll talk about it.
I don't even know this time what the excuse is because I've been given so many different reasons. But the people that were celebrating me getting kicked off had also done the same thing when they had me thrown off PayPal. I was thrown off PayPal twice. I was able to call them and reason with them and get back on. I think it was back in 2014, the first time I was thrown off. But this time, it's just, there is no one, they are completely unreachable at this point. I'm like, what am I even being accused of? I'm like, oh, you're breaking these rules. I'm like, which rule am I supposed to have broken and what did I do? It doesn't matter. There is no recourse that you can do. And so I switched, you know, I had Patreon. I always have redundancy. Well, I get kicked off that. Then I go to Subscribestar. Well, that's not available in Japan. So all I have left is a membership on my website until they get rid of that too, I suppose. And it's really bad timing. I got another baby on the way, and I'm just trying to fight against all these evil things.
You know, what always I find interesting is, and you hear this a lot, well, I've got a secondary channel. I've got a backup over here. I also have an account on that. Yo, how about looking at a permanent solution? If you're doing that kind of work anyway, maybe there's something out there that will work that is not at the mercy of some corporation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
But yeah, of course, this is horrible when this happens. And, you know, we can laugh about it. But yeah, I'm sure the Weinsteins that half their family income disappeared overnight. I'm sure that hurts. The same for this guy with a baby on the way. Of course it hurts. These are the lessons that people are not learning from others over and over.
The radio silence from the platform is the one that I think is interesting, because earlier in the show, he talks about how in the early days, if you got canceled off of PayPal, you could call them up or you could, you know, write them a letter and they would respond and they would tell you what's going on and they would help you. But now it seems like all these platforms have just adopted a strategy of complete silence. You get deplatformed and you don't get any response.
Now, No Agenda Show has an account manager at PayPal. And I have to say they've been fantastic. But there's a lot of automated stuff. And so this was maybe 2 months back. All of a sudden, you could not donate to the show. If you hit the PayPal, it'd be like, sorry, this organization is not authorized to receive payments at this moment. So, okay. And what had happened is someone had sent in a donation on a specific date. And in the donation note had mentioned, you know, Unabomber. All kinds of crap like that. So the bing, 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 bong, bong, bong. Yeah. So the, but now, of course, you know, we're probably a medium sized podcast account for them. So we have an account manager and they're very helpful. So that works great. But I am sure that if we as Podcast Index had a problem, we would not get anybody on the phone.
No,
I don't think so.
We're child's play. Yeah. We're pennies.
Do you want to thank some people before we go into four? No, I'm sorry. We'll finish, we'll finish it up. We'll finish it up.
Okay. All right. Well, because number four is a plot twist. Go for it.
I think, like, no one believed them. Like, what all my patrons have been watching me for years, and like, he doesn't do any of that, or reading. And so,
you know what you could do too is just call them racist. Go, look, man, I'm an American Indian, and if you want me to play that card, yeah, I'm gonna slam the hell out of you with it. You know,
I was the second most prominent American Indian on Patreon, probably, definitely in the top 10. I hate playing the race card, but I'll do it for my family because I got to do something. But
that's crazy, dude. You know,
yeah, that won't work.
No,
it won't work.
I do think it's interesting though that they deplatformed a Native American minority group. You know, that's
what?
But
you're acting. I got it. I thought something really happened.
Oh no!
Good acting. Sorry. You got me on that one.
Thank you.
Here's the problem. And the reason the two goals we set out when we started Podcast Index was to preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech and to retool it into a platform of value. These two things are taking place right before our eyes with this Patreon. So it's taken down because people don't like what you're saying. And the mechanism that's used is leveraged from the payment processor that Patreon uses. Patreon itself may not care that much. I don't know if the founders really care. I think that they would rather not have to deal with this or just have a way to say, sorry, free speech over here. But MasterCard is their payment processor. MasterCard, founding member of the World Economic Forum, the Davos Set, the Great Reset, they don't want any controversy. They want big brands to be sponsoring everything. They want the woke message, and it's their brand. Patreon is owned, not financially or legally, but their whole process is owned by MasterCard. And if it's not them, then it's the banks who are doing the same thing because the board, they have a board meeting or their board of directors doesn't like a certain tone, idea, or product. Guns is a good one. Marijuana is another one. Sex work. These are easy ones to throw out. That's been going on for years. Payday loans. If you provide those, no more. I can't do it. There's good and bad about that. But the point is the gatekeepers are at a lower level. You never hear about them. Patreon is not really the problem. It's the choice that is being made for the money route. And they're screwing with you. This is your international banking system. MasterCard's a big part of that.
Well, the, That, and that leads me to this. Andy Ngo, he replied to SoundCloud, and he said, "I demand to know the decision-making process your team member undertook, blah, blah, blah." Mm. Well, I mean, radio silence again. I wonder if there is sort of like the Robin Hood thing where send this guy a letter and then he commits suicide. I mean, like, I wonder if there is an issue here where the radio silence is a protective measure where, okay, so they're going to send you a note and say, okay, you've been banned, off of our platform. And, what if somebody, if that's their entire income, and in response to that, they are so decimated by this that they commit suicide, and then they find out, later, oh, my bad. We're sorry. It was actually somebody else reported you, and it was false. And now we take it back.
Sure,
that was an accident. It's like, I wonder if there's a liability issue here where they're afraid that the destruction that they may cause to people's financial lives and possibly real lives could come back on them if they communicate too much.
No, because they are protected by two things. One is the terms of service that everybody doesn't read and signed up for, which completely indemnifies them. And if that's a problem, Section 230 is right there to literally protect them from liability from anything.
I mean, that's true. I think that the bigger question I have is how this goes down with regards to individual people's lives and their decision making. I mean, so you have somebody like Weinstein, who people have been like talking to him on Twitter all the time. Hey, do podcasting 2.0. And there just seems to be this resistance amongst him. I don't know if it's just him or other people or whatever. There's this resistance to the concept. It's like, it's sort of like the whole Peter Wells thing. If a big company, big platform doesn't do it, then it's like, doesn't exist, or it's not legit or something. Yeah. I don't understand.
Yes, not legit. It's also, people are conditioned to only work with, I mean, and this is the same with podcasting journalism. What's the talk mainly about? How great these big companies are. People feel comfortable with big companies that provides validity to what they're doing, to their product. If you are part of Patreon, you know, Patreon is a brand by itself too. Or if you're part of Spotify, you're official. I mean, this is how it works, or how it's always worked. I think that's what's changing. I think that is, people are starting to move away. It's like, well, you know, no one wants to be on Twitter. Now, look, so now the Trump organization, I think it's with, I'm not sure exactly the story with this app, with this platform they're launching, Getter, Gettr, I think.
I haven't heard of that.
It's just starting. It's going to be a social network.
Is Trump, though? He's doing it.
Yeah, well, I was sure he was going to do it. But the strategy right there, you know, they have an app. Okay, let's see how long that lasts before it's taken out of the app store. You know, so it's the same crap all over. And that is a bigger problem than I think anyone wants to admit. The app store, you can show someone a great experience. I can send them a link to a PodFriend, CurioCaster, or a Podverse webpage. Be like, that's great. Well, why isn't there an app? I need an app. It has to be an app. If it's not an app, I mean, it's not real, is it? There's a lot of that going on.
Well, I think some of that on the Apple side of things is because Apple has intentionally kneecapped their progressive web app technology because they want to box in the native apps and make them the only first-class citizens on the platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's real drawbacks to trying to use a PWA. I mean, we've seen Martin just banging his head against the wall, you know, wailing about the shortcomings of the PWA architecture on the iPhone. And that's, you know, that's the thing that it's real. I
mean, it's not going to get any better. No. It's only going to get worse. They're closing down more stuff there. They have built a completely beautiful, safe environment for their users. And pirates not welcome.
No,
especially if you're not paying a toll at the door. So I know that people are seeing this. I know they are breaking out of this thinking. Bitcoin, it's so analogous. Bitcoin is an important part of what we're doing, not just because of the payment, but the thinking itself. Like, oh, we can actually use a different form of value to transfer value between each other. So Mastodon, the Fediverse, is another version of that. Is it quote-unquote mainstream? No. Will it ever be mainstream? Maybe not. Maybe not. You know, there's still always a lot of people who are perfect. Look, I've been under the radar. No one even knew I'd invented podcasting up until 2 years ago. The whole generation grew up thinking this was invented by the fine folks at Serial Podcast and NPR. Or that it was just Apple or Steve Jobs or any of this. Why? Because I have a podcast and an audience, while large, a million people. I'd hate for them to show up at the door all at once. But it's not a quote-unquote mainstream hit as people would expect it. But I'm making a living. Dvorak's making a living. And we're affecting lives. We're changing people's opinions. We're changing our own. It's a very beautiful experience, but you got to get over the I'm going to be number one. I'm going to be Joe Rogan. It's fake. Joe Rogan, Sophia with an or the Call Me Daddy. These three guys at Amazon, three dudes in a warehouse. It's fake. It's fake. They're not it's a scam to trick you. So here's where successful people are. This is where you want to be.
I like Cridlin's descriptions. Three rich white dudes I've never heard of.
That pisses me off. He's always like, well, three privileged guys. It wasn't white. It was privileged white men. And I despise that talk. I heard it. I don't like that. It's like, said the privileged white man. Like, shut up. It pisses me off. And it's good to see communities of color and the LGBTQ plus community. Newsflash, brown people, black people, they're people. They're not a community. Lesbians, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer, plus, not a community. That is the true bias. Sorry.
They're just people.
They're just people. Don't you, when you lump people into a category like that, you're weak.
Did you see the hit? There's a hit piece on Rogan of the New York Times that came out.
I read about it. I haven't seen it yet. What is it?
I haven't read through it 100% yet either, but it's got, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. We'll talk about it next week because it's a long article and I want to be able to talk.
Too big to cancel? Too big to cancel? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll have to read through it because I'm going to have to send him a note.
Well, before we do donations, do you want, I'm supposed to remind you to tell your TBL story.
The Tim Berners-Lee story.
Oh, yeah. Okay. TBL. I didn't know what that was.
Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web. Okay. I can't remember. This came up on the last show, and I forgot to tell it, but it doesn't make any sense today, but I'm happy to relate it. So there's no context for this other than I was reminded to tell you. Tim Berners-Lee was working in London in some, I can't remember exactly what his capacity was. But one day I got a letter, and I was living in London, at my home, from the Queen. And it was an invitation to the relaunch of the Royal Family website. And would I please come to Buckingham Palace to celebrate with the Queen? And Tim Berners-Lee had invited me, or put me on the Queen's list. I'd never met Tim. Well, I met him then, of course. I'd never met him before. So I was like, wow, that is, and I went, it was unbelievable. I went through the front gates. You know, if you've ever been to Buckingham Palace, you know, there's a big gate around it and then people stand in front of it watching the changing of the guards. So they pick me up in a Mercedes, which I will say is quite a violation of any code.
No, that's German.
Yes, exactly.
But you that's what been they in did. A Bentley.
Yeah. I know they pick me up in the Benz. And then you go right to the front gate, you know, people parted ways, you know, and then they opened the gate and they let me in. It's a much longer story, but it was quite fun to meet the Queen, who was standing on a box.
on a box.
She's a very, very petite woman. And it was a very surreal experience in Buckingham Palace, which is the portion I was in is clearly the reception, you know, where you have these types of functions. But there was some phenomenal art in this waiting hall where we all had to kind of were staged for a while. And another clue there was, I went to the restroom, like, I am totally stealing a Buckingham Palace towel or soap or nailed to the wall dispensers. They know what's going on. That was my TBL story.
they don't want the Dutch in their bathrooms.
This is a value for value podcast itself. If you wonder if these things can actually work, here's your proof. We're close to a year now of podcasting 2.0. It is supporting podcastindex.org completely. Now, we are not paying ourselves anything, but that's not the point of this exercise. It's supported by the people who are interested in it, have a stake in it, and who just want to support it. And that's why it's value for value, and this podcast is a part of that as well. And we love receiving boosts from you whenever that's possible.
Boost.
If you're listening to the show on a podcasting 2.0 compatible app, if not, shame on you. Go to newpodcastapps.com. And if you really can't do it any other way, then we do accept your cuck bucks through the PayPal. Go to podcastindex.org, scroll down to the bottom, hit the big red donation button, and you're good to go. And who can we thank today for supporting us for yet another week?
We have got out of the gate Chris Arnold. It's $33.33. He says, "Go podcasting. Keep up the good work, boys. Sir Seat Sitter."
Go podcasting! Thank you.
We've got two donations, both for $21 from Top Notch Tech Consulting. And I helped him get his podcast set up on Value for Value, so he said he would throw us a donation.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he just says, "History, MB, money, thanks." I'm not sure what that.
What's the amount again? Means. What's the amount?
There's two donations, both in the amount of $21, so $42 total.
Well, 42 is the answer to all things in the universe.
Ah, that's it. It worked itself out.
Yep.
Okay, so that's top notch, and that's all of our weekly donors. A little low.
Oh, that's it. That's our final tally.
That's the weekly. Yeah, I mean that's the one-time donors. We've got some monthlies,
right? But we thank them at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. When do we thank them?
Well, I just do them as they come in. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yes, we. Sir Hey Moose, $50.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Martin, $2. Dreb Scott, $15.
Dreb.
Michael Kimmerer, $5.33. Jeff Miller, $20. Terry Keller, $4.11. Pedro Goncalves, $5. Aaron Reno, $5. Mark Graham, $1. DroidWorks LLC, $20. And Scott Yalbert, $12. We figured out who DroidWorks LLC was one day.
Did we? I don't remember.
I forget every single time.
I realize there's a critical flaw in. I love hearing these donation amounts. The 411. There's a .33. These are all code. These are all fun, and they're meaningful to the people who send them, which is what any donation should be—is meaningful to you. And we appreciate this very much. The problem that, what we didn't think through completely, I think we've probably touched on it with the.
We didn't think anything through
completely. That's correct. if someone sends you a boost amount or an amount, a stream amount, and you have a value split, mm-hmm. even with the index and the app that you're using, the amount will never come through as was intended.
And so what do you mean?
Well, so if someone sends 33 Satoshis to me, like, oh, I'm going to send this podcast 33 Satoshis, I will maybe receive 17.
Oh,
and so I can never trace back that the original was a 33. Something for the TLV records we could do, maybe? I don't think so.
No, I mean, that's a good point. Like, that could be done in the TLV. You could see... Like you could put in there what the original amount was.
I think that's something to consider because it's such an, I mean, look at it. Every single week, we have donations that are coded messages. Here was two donations together is 42. We figured it out. We had a good laugh. It's part of the value for value system. The .33s, all of this stuff. The 411s, the 420s. So that would be something that would be very valuable to have the original amount in the TLV record that comes through.
I'm looking at the 7629169 record, which is the one that everybody is using except Sphinx. Sphinx is using a different one. And it has in here, it has value in millisats as one of the fields. So that means that it could be embedded in here according to the record.
That would be good.
That would be very good. Yeah. Yeah. It's got it right here. So if we can get everybody to add that to their app, that would fix that problem. Let me see. You know what?
It's not a huge problem, but I'd love to get it kind of working before things roll out pretty big. It's already, you know, Satoshi Stream's already using this and they can't calculate it either, I'll bet.
So Stephen B, who we're going to have on the show, I've gotten completely out of the guest mindset lately, so I got to get back in that. So the amount, Stephen is going to set up his tip jar to support putting in a memo so that you can send, you know, donation right, memo right. with the tip jar. Mm-hmm. So then we can just make sure that when he sends that, I'll let him know that
it carries along the original amount.
Yeah, well, that'll solve that.
But the tip jar, the tip jar is also split amongst the app and so the percentage to the app.
No, because he splits it out in the tip jar. Breaks out the splits and you can send your tip to any one of those parties. You can choose, like, for us, if I have me and you with each with a 50% split.
I understand that, but does the app take 1% and Podcast Index take 1% of that payment because they're using our API? I would venture to say yes.
No, I don't think so at that point, because at that point it's just a pure key send from the app. It's not doing the fees anymore. It's not doing the various splits at that point. It's just a single key send, because if you take it, the boosts get a split and the per minute streaming gets a split, but the tip jar is just something that's a function on top of all that
right. Okay. Yeah. And you can tip the app itself directly from there. And you
yes.
can okay.
Yes. And we don't deserve a split of that.
It's more important to me. The tip is one thing, because, you know, the last thing I want is people going straight to the tip jar and just doing their cool numbers, and then the app gets nothing. You can't do that. That's not cool.
Well, I don't think that'll happen personally, because the boost is the fun part.
Yeah, the boost is where you want to have the numbers.
Yeah,
and so that's where you want to have the original amount travel along with the record. But also, there's lots of people who do. Well, the per minute is not that big. I mean, it's easy to put it in. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But for boost, I think that would be the main. That's the juicy part to have that, because that's really where people want to, you know, send the show something which carries all the way down the line.
Yeah, and if both of them have the original amount listed in the TLV, then it's fine either way, because you're going to get to see them even if you boost. Because I always boost 2112. That's my rush boost. And then, so I know, like, that people can tell, especially because they're still small. I like to know that the podcaster can see that come in and know that it was me.
Right, but then, I can't see that on any of my shows.
Yeah, because you can't, because it takes the fees out, the routing fees.
Exactly,
Yeah, we got to fix that.
Let me thank everybody once again for supporting the project, especially those.
I got a night note to read, though, from NA Night.
Go.
Damon, he says you pronounce it Kasajak. Okay, yeah, Kasajak. He just wrote in a note for he forgot for his last donation last week. And it says, Adam was right. I came over from NA, where I hold the title Knight of the Leap of the Lepus. Lepus, L-E-P-U-S. I don't know how you pronounce that.
I don't know. Lepus.
I just want to thank both of you sincerely for the work you're doing. I truly believe you're doing something remarkable and has the potential to affect the world in a positive way. Free expression is vital to for us to move forward and expand our understanding of the world and ourselves. Podcasts can also act as time capsules for how the world understands the past. I would like future historians to have an honest picture of how people spoke about the topics of the day and not skewed versions influenced by powerful brokers or by people's fear of losing their voices. Good luck to you and thanks. Best regards, Damon.
It's very kind of you, Ben. And thank you to everyone who's involved in the project, all the developers, all the historians, the journalists, the thinkers, the testers, the fans. Everyone has a role to play and it's all working beautifully.
I thought people might want to see our hosting bill and, our hosting bill this month was $423.86.
Still sub 500, Dave. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're still doing good on that. We've got quite a few, or it went up. It was around 350 for a while and it went up because I had to boost the capacity on, or I had to bump up the VM size.
More lithium crystals.
Yes, yes, exactly. 2.4 gigawatts of power on the nodes. So we've got the big ones, the database server, and then we got a bunch of $20 a month aggregator nodes. And we've got a couple of dedicated VMs that are $30 a month for the front end. But anyway, that's the way that rolls out, $423.86.
All right. Well, thank you all. Now you know exactly where it went. And we also opened up a sizable channel, which we didn't really spend the money, spent a little bit to open it, with LNPay. We appreciate that. That was really good because that saves everybody fees and hops, and Podcast Index is routing. I think Feelus, I have to run through the channels every single time. Some of that's still kind of wonky. It's like, I think Autopilot may close and open things and they sets a default fee. So, but we try to keep that at zero for, but it's kind of it's a cat and mouse game because you set it low. And then what happens invariably is someone uses your route to send a million Satoshis to some external source and it runs through us and then we have a liquidity problem. So it's kind of a give and take. Got to figure it out. We might do a private channel with them just to stop that.
Should we turn off autopilot?
I'm not so sure. The new heuristics of it are apparently really good. But does really good mean good for micropayments? Not so sure. So, but
yeah, that's my question too.
Well, it's kind of not broken right now, so I'm be very careful with changes like this.
Well, the reason I ask is because every now and then I see channels open and close, and then I see the hit that it has when you have that on-chain transaction fee. And then I'm like, well, did we really need that channel? I don't know.
No, I'm closing channels that we don't need, replacing ones that are too small with bigger ones, then closing the original ones, but also learning to rebalance. And people running their own nodes need to learn this as well. We all need to learn how it works. But I think it comes back to what we said earlier. The Lightning Network was not really launched with true or maybe even architected to a degree with true micropayments in mind. It works really well, but micropayments are, one Satoshi, it's almost like everyone was saying, well, your refrigerator can order your milk one day. And so here we have the refrigerator ordering the milk. It costs one Satoshi. That was always, well, you can just send one sat, one Satoshi. No, you can't. That can cost you 7 sats just to send that one Satoshi.
Yeah, right.
So, and that kind of goes against the whole idea of this network that is, ad hoc by its very nature and kind of forces us towards, okay, we're building our own little private network and it's going to have to be private at some point, i.e. the channels cannot be discoverable by other routes because they capture our routes and use them, which is fair, but then we struggle with liquidity and we're then doing it for free for them. And I'm sure there's all kinds of configurations and stuff to do, but it's, early days.
Can you have certain channels that have that are low fee? And can you set the routing fee per channel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we could have higher routing fees on channel, you know, on the other channels, and then have lower ones on just designated ones.
No, but the problem is if it's discoverable, i.e. it's not a direct peer-to-peer, or we know it's only coming from one source, it's on the graph. And then if someone needs to get to LN Pay and send 20,000 Satoshis, or 200,000 or 2 million, it comes through
it's
us.
Going through us.
And then we take no fee, and then we lose our liquidity, which is exactly the opposite of how it's supposed to work.
Right. Yeah, so that's why you were talking about a private channel to LN Pay.
Yeah, yeah. If it's private, then, it's not on the graph and it won't be used. Or at least that's what I understand.
All right, that makes sense.
Now, speaking of that, let's just be open about something here. It's time to talk about Sphinx Chat, because we're having trouble, and I want to make sure that, you know, we're not just letting this pass by, that everyone understands that Sphinx Chat is not really functioning for most people right now. And there's been a lot of outreach. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but we're the ones getting a lot of the feedback, and, you know, I've been passing it on, trying to reach out. I know a couple other people have. I'm not sure what's happening, but it doesn't seem like, and it is, Sphinx Chat itself was kind of the nonprofit, let's do good for the world of a company that does other things with that app and with the Lightning Network, which is Stackworks.
Yes. Yeah, Stackwork, yeah.
Stackwork. And they do phenomenal, very interesting stuff they're doing. But it's a small organization. I think they've kind of, you know, left us to our own devices for a while, or I don't know. It seems like things are clogging up.
Yeah. That model they have of running a whole lot of private nodes and having it route through a single
not,
sort of routing.
Not great
node.
For micropayments, for high volume, low, or high quantity, low value micropayments. You're right. I don't think that works very well.
Yeah. Everybody we've talked to has said that that's a hard model to use for this type of thing. And they seem to be have their focus in other places somewhere right now, because we just hadn't heard anything from Paul or Evan or anybody in a long time. So I'm not sure that I know. Dame Jennifer Hill was having a lot of problems with the app the other day. James Cridlin has had problems with the app.
App does. I mean, I get maybe 3 boosts that show up per tribe and almost no messages.
Yeah, the No Agenda feed, like the podcast, doesn't even show up in the tribe for me anymore.
Really? Oh, it shows. Yeah. It shows up for me.
I know it shows up for a lot of people, but I don't see it on my app at all. It never pops up. The other ones work, but not the No Agenda one doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think it's just
maybe you're in the wrong.
Down.
Maybe you're in the wrong tribe. Maybe there's a secondary tribe. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's the right tribe. It's just I think the app is just flaky a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know what's going on over there.
Well, it being an open source product, a clone has been made, and we need to talk about this as well. N2N2, which is run by a guy who I think he had one of the, if not the largest, Instagram influencer talent agency. And he cashed out of that and he moved to Austin, and he really believes in the Bitcoin dream. Or vision, I should say. And so he's cloned Sphinx and he's spending his own money on it, or he's raising money and he's out talking a lot. And we saw him at Bitcoin 2021. It seems to be kind of, I mean, it's real. I know that there's an app. I haven't been able to download it or test it. He's making a lot of noise in the market. And he may be onboarding people, but I'm not sure exactly if it's working yet.
Well, you know, he brought on, is it JP Sears?
I think that's
one of his, because the routing node appears to be an N2N2 node that directs to him.
Right. Well, JP's podcast showed up with a value block, so we know that that's real.
Yeah, but the problem is that we couldn't figure out was that it only shows $24 of capacity. On that channel, and so I just don't understand exactly what's happening there, because that would mean that JP can't get any more than $24.
Mm. Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah, so I'm just not sure what's happening. It's a mystery. And if Sphinx has struggled with that routing node model, then then into may struggle as well.
Yeah.
But there again, I mean, I don't know, but this is all just sort of opaque. I don't know. They may have figured out some other way to do it well that we don't understand. But who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. Just making sure we update everybody on that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been telling people that are wanting to onboard, unless you really want the tribe model where you have all the chat and everything in there. If you want that, then yeah, look at the Sphinx style app.
Yeah.
If you don't, I mean, if what you care about is just getting the value for value payments, it's probably better to go to LN Pay.
Yeah.
Because you're not, people have struggled so much with Sphinx, at least, you know, for the moment. So that would be my advice.
LNPay.co, and you can sign up for free and create a podcaster wallet. It even says podcaster wallet or podcast wallet, and it gives you the code to either paste directly into your feed or your ID that you can then use at podcasterwallet.com.
Yeah. Now, ideally, I mean, if you have a podcast that's not monetized currently, or a podcast that has, you are monetized, but you don't get much, you know, $50 a month, something like that, some small amount, the LN Pay thing is a good way to go. So because you can get your feet wet, you can play with it. Now if you have a larger podcast that's well monetized and you're making significant money off of it, I would probably just go ahead and roll your own node, because that really does give you the most freedom. It's not free, but you can do, you know, basically what Dave Jackson did, roll his own Voltage node, and then it takes a little bit longer, it's a little bit more complex, but you can get help, and then you're set. Then John Chidji's set up that way. There's lots of people who they are monetizing, and they're getting significant income from their podcast. And when you're in that scenario, it really, you don't probably want to rely on a custodial solution. You want to really probably do your own thing.
Yeah.
And have a private node.
And if you're a hobbyist and you like doing that kind of stuff, then by all means, you know, get Umbral or Raspi Blitz. I personally like, the next level is a Voltage node that you manage entirely yourself, but then they have an option for, wasn't that $17 a month? And they give you I think it's 2 million Satoshis of liquidity right off the bat. So those channels are managed. It typically works out of the box. Not always.
the only thing that's slow is what Dave Jackson ran into, which is
wasn't showing up on the graph for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's just luck of the draw, though. It seems that's just one of those, okay, it happens type deals, which is odd.
Yeah. It seems to be.
Okay. I feel like we've missed a lot of things. Have we missed stuff that we needed to talk about today?
I had a ton of stuff about a ton of namespace stuff, but we're just kind of going long. I mean, I guess we'll just have to boot it to next week.
Do you want to do some namespace tease? You want to be a namespace teaser, or do you?
See, this week was a week where I did a whole lot of stuff, and I feel like I don't have anything to show for it.
Okay, all right. Well, we can carry it over until next week.
Well, the GUID stuff.
Yeah. This is.
Who was it? Alex wrote the Medium podcast Medium tag. We'll just do it next week.
No, I remember what I want. There's one thing I wanted to mention.
Okay.
So we were talking about using Matrix Server for cross app communication, and there's I want to make very clear what I see going on. I think there is a win for podcast apps if we can do YouTube style comments that work cross app.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is that works. That's what people have been using. It was very successful for Rogan's community. It was very much missed when that went away. It is a very specific style of chat. Everyone can see it. There's prior art there. We talked about the Matrix server, and you know, everyone has their own agenda. But right now we have two camps cross-talking, and I think it's confusing on podcastindex.social. So on one hand, I think Alex Gates wants chat. And so he's focusing on live chat, where what I'm personally interested in is comments. And so now there's a disconnect. People are, I can see the conversation. Whoa, I thought we were going to use Matrix for comments. No, that should be Mastodon, XMPP for chat. I think I just made it worse last time. Whatever I did, we went nowhere. There's just a lot of talk. And I personally, I would just say it would be great if we could have YouTube style comments. What is debilitating is all of these what ifs that we throw up. Well, what if a podcaster doesn't want comments? You know, these are things that will that have held podcasting back for a decade. You got to start somewhere. Someone's got to do something, implement something, just do something. History shows that when one developer does something, other ones go, oh, how about this change, whatever, I'll implement, I'll integrate, maybe do it this way. And then things happen. Right now, it's just a lot of talk and zero action because I think I personally confused it. So I'm rectifying that. But no matter what it is, if it's chat, you know, if it's chat or comments, whatever anyone wants to do, let's do it. Because now we're just arguing about why it won't work for certain people. I don't understand that.
So there's the two things are chat. Live chat in the episode, and we're thinking about that in terms of Matrix, and then comments and reviews.
I would not put those together.
Really? Okay.
No, because it will never get it done. It's two separate huge problems. Comments, huge problem. Reviews, even huger problem.
But what are you commenting on?
That episode.
But that's a comment.
Yes.
So a comment, but where does that comment, where does it exist? I mean, like, what? Because I can see live chat within that.
No,
live chat in the episode.
Go back to YouTube. You go to a YouTube video.
Right.
And you scroll down, and there's comments.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That's it.
The comments live forever.
And they're threaded. The chat is ephemeral. Threaded. Yeah, and they're threaded. And I the chat idea is fantastic, but the market is not asking for that. The market is saying we want comments under, and this has been wanted forever on podcasts. We want to have YouTube style threaded comments on an episode of any podcast.
So you're saying the live chat aspect of that is forget it.
No, I'm not saying forget it, but I'm saying
for now. I mean,
so we do a live, we have a IRC chat for No Agenda. And with each show, which we've been doing for 14 years, over a million people listening, there's 1,000 people in the chat. And it's fun and it's cute. There's a lot of shenanigans that goes on in there, yeah. a lot of unfriendly things being said, but that's, you know, it's not even our chat, it's Void Zeros, but. That's pretty much permissible. But what you're going to get next is you're going to have, okay, we have a lot. And this will happen with anything, but I think it's easier to do comments because when you get to a live chat, you need moderators. And then the moderators become Nazis. And then the people become pissed off about the Nazis.
And you need moderators for comments too, though.
Different than live chat. Live chat, you got to be kicking people or not. Either you don't do it and you live with whatever comes through. I have a long time experience with live chat and, and it's go look at the difference between a free for all. Nobody cares. You might get hurt. Your knee might be skinned chat at No Agenda versus twit. Twit, you breathe wrong and you're kicked out.
The problem with comments that I struggle with is, I mean, the technology, you can put it together, but who hosts, this is the shipwreck that all the apps keep having, the app developers, who's going to host the comments? Like where, okay, so if you're Podfriend, do you run an ActivityPub server?
You see, I thought that the Matrix was perfect for chat. I mean, for comments. I screwed up myself. I mean, well, I don't know how it works under the hood. I'm just looking at the experience. Very
Matrix
much like
is more like Jabber. It's not really like a Twitter style, Mastodon style comment.
But I'm not asking for that. I'm asking for an exact replication. I am the users who I get a lot of feedback from. They want YouTube style comments.
Right. Which we're saying the same thing. I'm just using bad examples. So the YouTube style comments would have to come through some sort of federated ActivityPub type interface.
Yes.
Now you could probably do that with Matrix. It'd just be a whole lot harder.
So we want it to be easy.
Right.
I don't know. The reason why we got, and maybe this was my misinterpretation. I thought Breeze, what Roy said, they were going to use Matrix. I thought they were doing it for comments. If it's for chat, all I'm saying is I've been around for a while. People want comments right now. Chat is not top of the list. It's top of the list for some people. And I would love to have it myself, but it's not the win for podcasting 2.0.
Right. But then but there again, my question though is who hosts the server that contains the comments?
Dude, I'm the face of the organization. You've got to figure it out, Dave.
I don't want to figure it out. It's annoying. I don't like this.
I'm just dreaming, baby. I just throw it over my shoulder and it works and someone makes it happen.
That's because, like, if I'm CurioCaster, I would love to have comments, but I would not love to have to moderate those comments. And if they're running on my, if they're federated and now I have people using PodFriend app that are now commenting on things to get federated over to my ActivityPub comment instance, then I got to be responsible for taking care of that crap too. Like that's to me, that's the drawback is like the tech is there, but the drawback is the workload that it puts on you as the app developer.
Okay.
So that's completely
wrong. That is not where it belongs. The podcaster needs to be responsible for that.
Yes.
And how that works, I don't know. If that means, look, we're already telling podcasters have to get a podcast host. Podcasters have to get gear to do that. I sound like Todd from Blueberry now. Podcasters have to get gear. Podcasters have to do all kinds of things. Now you need to get a wallet. Everybody wants the shit for free. That's not always going to work. So what do podcasters need? What do I as a podcaster need to get comments cross app on my podcasts? I will moderate them. I'm happy to do that.
Well, what if Blueberry provides the ActivityPub instance for all of their customers' podcasts?
As long as each individual podcaster can moderate their own comments and are responsible for them, that's equally as important. But again, here we're doing what if. Show me an instance of it working, and then we can find out who's responsible or how it will or will not work. We don't really even know without trying.
Well, I can tell you exactly why. I can tell you why the what ifs and exactly what the holdup is here. Because nothing like this exists. And in order to get a working ActivityPub system that will do that, that's a lot of from scratch code. That could be 6 months of coding.
Wow.
And nobody wants to commit to it until you have all of the pitfalls worked out ahead of time, because you don't want to get 3 months into it and realize, oh my God, this is not going to work.
Of course. Fair enough.
Yeah. That's why there's such trepidation on this. And because you can say, you know, you roll out a podcast tag and then somebody can spend a couple of weeks.
How about this? Let me just try something. Let me try something completely arbitrary.
Okay.
And I'll be implementing these tags on my Castapod very soon.
Yes. I'm not going to comment on that.
Good. Do you speak French yet?
No. Je m'appelle Dave.
Zut alors. How about this? If there were a way to integrate it, so very much like an external chapter file, cloud chapters, which guess what? Takes a server, takes effort, takes, you know, I'm using right now a free service. We would be happy to pay for studio.hypercatcher.com. So if I set up a Mastodon server, cost me €5 through masto.host, it would be great to be able to use that, that every podcast app would say, oh, there's comments available through this Mastodon server. And, or through this Mastodon account, maybe. You know, but I as a podcaster would be responsible for the base layer, for the base comment on each episode, on my own system. And that would then flow through to all of the apps. And I would moderate it, probably initially, through the web browser on the Mastodon instance. Later on, obviously, I'd love to moderate it through the app that I have a login to. But is that something? So that's really just webhooks or hooks into the system. I have to pass off a certain parameter for the base comment, or, you know, we've kind of discussed that before. Is that something that's doable? Because it seems relatively simple for me to set it up and maintain it. And then it kind of leaves the podcast app developers, you know, hands off, except for the integration of whatever URL I pass off per episode.
Yeah.
That didn't sound very positive. Just help me understand what I'm missing. Am I wrong in this idea? Is there still months of coding? I just want to understand what I'm not getting.
Possibly. The Mastodon. Yes, Mastodon speaks ActivityPub, but it's not probably well suited to that use case.
Well, okay. But just outside of ActivityPub, let's just do the exercise with me, because I really don't know. I'm just going. I have very little technical knowledge. Perhaps it's not the ActivityPub is not interesting at all in this case. I'm using a purely, and maybe even a non-federated Mastodon instance. All it does is it keeps my comments on my podcast on my server that I can moderate.
Right, but it's still ActivityPub. And if you're going to integrate, you're going to have to integrate in an open standard way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want, because otherwise you're going to end up with Mastodon. You're going to end up with a system where comments in podcasts have to use Mastodon. So you want it to speak the open language, so that you're not tying it to one specific product.
Okay, so that's why you want to use ActivityPub.
Right.
And what is the problem with that?
Well, Mastodon is very specific and opinionated in how it uses ActivityPub. And so you don't want to, I feel like there may be a sort of, it's complicated. Like that's again for the trepidation. I feel like what we need is a model. So, that's one thing that we're missing with this whole conversation, because a lot of people can come up with a lot of different scenarios in which they say, well, we could do it like this. But what is missing is a schematic to say, here's the tag. I aggregate the tag. I hand it off to a podcast app. The podcast app reads the tag, and here's how it interops mm-hmm. with an ActivityPub instance, whether it's Mastodon, Pleroma, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is missing from this thing, because there's no, it's going to be very easy to get lock in if you're just thinking in terms of one product. So it's sort of like, the live system architecture proposal or discussion on the namespace. That was very helpful because he sketched out what it was supposed to, what the whole interaction was supposed to look like.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, one person that might be good at this would be Benjamin Bellamy, that could take, because he's him, he's got a lot of ideas around Activity Pub.
Yeah.
And I feel like he could write a schematic that shows where the interaction points are between the tag, the comment server, and the app. I really think that's what's missing here, because there's so many ways you can do it, and you can get it wrong and go a level too high and a level too low.
Yeah.
And then you're locked. It's not open anymore. That's the,
I got you. And I think you're pointing towards exactly the right person. Because when we had one of our first dev Jitsi calls, mm-hmm. I remember it was him and Martin were having this exact conversation.
Right.
And Benjamin and Martin was saying, well, I just want to just put some webhooks in, and then anyone else can tie into my webhooks and we'll be done with it. And then he proposed to his girlfriend and bought a house and all this stuff, and then he just gave up on it. Nice. I'm just kidding. But Benjamin was very clear about that. So Benjamin, auriez-vous la gentillesse de m'aider?
Yeah.
I think I asked him to help. I'm not sure.
It's better than me. All I know is like animal names. Like Cheval is horse.
Yes.
Cheval.
The Deux Cheval, the 2CV Citroën, famous automobile made in France, 2 horsepower.
Nice.
Oh, you got to look at it. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's called the Duck, the Citroën. So Citroën 2CV. You go and go and search for it right now.
How do you spell Citroën?
Citroen. There's a umlaut over the E, but you don't have to do that.
Does it get the little? Does it have the little stand? The
no,
little funky,
no funky
dog
hanging
poop on the bottom of the
sea? No dangling thingy. No.
Okay, Citroën. What?
2CV.
2CV.
Mm-hmm. I had one of these cars.
Ooh, it's red.
It's made of tin. It has it's convertible. You know, it's you have to roll it back like a sardine can.
Oh, does it have a wind up on the back?
Almost. In fact, every Citroën has a crankshaft. You can still start it with a hand crank in the front.
Nice.
Even the modern ones.
Dang.
Even the modern, the high end limousine still have the crankshaft. But
holy crap, how would you crank that? It's probably like a million pounds of compression on that engine.
Well, not on this.
Is it like a 2-cylinder?
It's a 2-horsepower. 2-horsepower. Oh. There's nothing in there. I think it's, I don't know if it has 3 cylinders. Can't remember.
Du Cheval?
Yeah. I can't remember. But I, what's cool about it is the gear shift is on the dashboard, and it's basically a rod that goes through it's called the fascia, to be technical about it, through the fascia, what we know as the dashboard, through a hole, straight to the block. And so it has like a black billiard ball on it. So, and if you can look for an inside picture, you'll see it. And I think it's 3-speed. So to the left and forward, that's gear 1. Then you pull back, that's 2. And then you move it to the middle and push forward, that's the 3rd gear. And then reverse is obviously to the right and back. It's a phenomenal vehicle. You still see them all over the place, especially Caribbean islands.
See, that's my anti-theft mechanism for my truck. But my daily driver is a 65 Ford Ford pickup, and it uses a 3 on the column.
Nice.
Nobody knows.
No one knows how to drive it.
Yeah. That's my best theft deterrent.
All right. Well, I think we've given people something to think about. And I look forward to whatever we do. I'm just saying, I know where the winds are. I can feel that one. And it's a great way to get people to use an app.
It's easily the most complicated thing that's going to happen in the namespace. Easily.
God, I hate hearing that. It's so weird.
Easily. I mean, like, and look how long it took for something to compete with Twitter. And it's just federating of comments in a way that's sane is not easy.
Right. No, no doubt. No doubt.
The other thing would be that I feel like it's time for the live tag. I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like I would like to see some motion on that now that we have PodPing in place.
I think that that's already, I'm not going to stop anything because I'll use it, obviously. And I think, but let's just be clear what we're doing because there's confusion. So either we're doing live stream, alternate enclosure, live chat, or we're doing something else. Sorry?
But that it's the same. So like, the reason it's time for live is because we now have alternate enclosure and PodPing.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to lay those two things down first.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay, I got you.
We can put the live tag in there with an alternate enclosure specifying the stream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the bat signal through the Hive thing. am I right? The bat signal through the Hive thing.
Yes, but the reason I'm laughing is because if somebody drops in this conversation, they have no idea what the hell we're talking about.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, the bat signal through the Hive thing.
There you go. Podcasting 2.0 in a nutshell. What do we do? The bat signal through the Hive thing. Get it? Got it? Good.
Done.
Right. So much to think about. So much to think about. All right. So we'll focus on that, and maybe Benjamin Bellamy can draw us up a model for the comments.
If he will, I'd love him for it.
Ah. Of course he will. This is his wheelhouse. He's been waiting to pounce.
Yeah.
We buttered him up with my knowledge of the Deux Chevaux. So now it's just like, he's good to go. It's in the pocket, Dave. Don't worry about it. Okay. Score.
Excellent. Bingo.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We should stop this show. No, is anyone still listening?
No. Yeah. It's just two of us.
Come on.
Here's your cue to boost. You know you want to. Well,
we know Tim will.
Yes.
He's already told us.
we already have him mind controlled. All right. Holy crap, man. I'm going to go do some Faraday caging and ordering of stuff. And I got to go figure some things out. Tina the Keeper is not happy that all the lights have to be off in the house while I'm doing a show because that's kind of annoying.
Because
they're all on dimmers. My goodness. I think I'm going to have to start, but it's easier to change out the microphone than change out all the dimmers, I think.
God, that sucks because you love that mic.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think these things are just broadcast. And mind you, I'm smartifying this house that we bought. The guy had literally everything. Smart door locks, you know, the doorbell, and all of these items, including smart lights. I don't know if these dimmers are controllable or not. They all have their own transceivers. You know, they create their own mesh network amongst each other, which is part of the Amazon Sidewalk project, part of the Bluetooth spec, if you believe it. Yeah. And they're all communicating and sending data and passing on packets. And it's transceivers on a chip. So it's not going to be, you know, really well shielded for harmonics, etc.
You're going to plug your pie hole in and think that thing's just going to melt.
No, because that traffic doesn't go through through Wi-Fi. They're broadcasting it down the street. They're broadcasting the blue. This is how the Apple Find Your Luggage tag works. I've been reading up on this. It's disgusting.
That's the peer-to-peer thing.
Yes,
right?
Your smart TV is doing this. And if it didn't, it's embedded in their chips. They can turn it on. And then all of a sudden,
Faraday cage.
Yeah, but I can't put a Faraday cage around the TV now, can I? makes it hard to watch.
No, you just said sit in the whole house. Yes.
Okay, Dave, I'm on it.
The whole house, or just wrap your head in it. Just wrap it around your head.
Next week, I think we have Eric coming on as a guest. Is that correct, or is it the week after?
Yeah. Okay. No, it's next week.
Great. He'll give us an update on what he's doing in the back office. It'll be fun.
I wonder if the RE20 would be better, or if it's going to suffer from the same problem.
It may even be worse.
Why?
I don't know. This is supposed to be kind of the 320 is supposed to be the throw it around, it'll work okay type thing.
Yeah.
Spit as loud as you can, and the 20 is a very beautiful, high-end, expensive microphone.
Oh, it's a fickle monster, I guess.
Might be.
Oh, well, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, I hope so.
After 17 orders of parts, you'll figure it out.
Jeez. Anything else I can do for you, my friend?
No, man. No, I'm good. I'm good.
What you doing?
Happy 4th of July.
Thank you. Yes. Happy Independence Day. We'll be celebrating here in the heart of Texas Hill Country. It should be interesting. Real Americana.
How's Pflugerville?
Pflugerville is great. The Schlitterbahn says hi. It's not even near where we live.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend, Dave.
All right, man. See you.
Everybody, thank you so much for joining the board meeting. Sorry it went a little bit long, but you will enjoy your weekend. We'll be back next week with another episode of Podcasting 2.0.
Listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Boost.
Go podcasting!